So, can you briefly tell me about your artistic practice?
I'm actually using my ear more than my eyes. I feel like the ear have like unlimited options and unlimited expectations and unlimited visions with the sound and the frequencies more than the color palette. Like visuals, it just like for me, it's quite limited. It feed my memory, it feed my kind of like daily practice, but ear, it's sort of a metaphor for understanding the surrounding more. And I think also kind of like my sound memory, it's much more affected than my visual memory, you know? So I'm basically electronic music and sound artist composer. And from time to time, I also translate those sound waves into visuals. So it's not only about the composition, but also it's about how to do the verse, how to transfer these segments of sonics to visual objects, not to combine like visuals and the sound together.
Interesting. I know you now live in Berlin, but could you tell me, from your perspective, your birth or cultural background, what your parents were, where you come from, maybe how you identify yourself, what you are?
Basically, I born in Cairo, in a kind of like an old neighborhood in Cairo, which is now we called it as a part of old Cairo. I grew up in a really nice community of diverse between like different nationalities and different like religions as well. And actually, I'm quite lucky since actually my family also sort of not conservative, and also they are also coming from different cultures and different, let's say, backgrounds. And so I based in Cairo, I born in Cairo, and even if now I lives in Berlin, I moved to Berlin 3 years ago, but also I feel myself I'm in between, you know. It's I also moved to Germany when I was quite old, you know. But I'm still in between Cairo and Berlin, and Cairo is the source of my identity, of my heart, of my sounds as well, you know. And I think Cairo, it's feed my identity. It's a metaphor of what I compose since I started to work and to practice in the sounds. I also feel myself I'm lucky since I born in a really well educated family and a Sufi identity parents where they feed me the philosophy and the contemporary side and the history as well of the philosophy of Sufi, which they gave me books to read since I was young and understand the different types of philosophy of Sufi, not only related to the Muslim religious, but also related to the human life and life behavior and the principles and the ethics. So I think it's already affected my composition since I grow in the time of radio, I grow in the time of cassette, and I'm still until now have my radio show, and I'm still working with cassettes. So I think it's affected my work as well, like my background, the Egyptian, my background, my Sufi identity, which I so proud, and I talk about this like every in each occasion, in each composition, you know.
So one of your parents is a philosopher?
No, they work like normal jobs, but they used to read to
Okay.
like feed the knowledge by reading. They are not philosophers, Khalis. It's like I think one of the really lucky things that I grow in a house where we have like a little library, we have like a physical books, we have like this daily hour for reading, you know, like a different readings, like novels, scientists, books, history books, philosophy books. It's like this like daily life of have like an hour of reading before sleeping. And also I was quite lucky because I grew up in a family, in a house where we didn't have television. So we grow up, I wake up on the announcement of the first broadcast in the Egyptian radio. And then in the East, in the weekend, we have like a videotapes to have like a movie or a theater play in the videotapes, and also collecting the cassettes. So I think this kind of like 90s generation, I think it's affected very much to my childhood and affected me until now.
So your parents are both from Egypt.
Yes.
And then both from Cairo?
Yes.
Okay. So where you go home is Cairo.
Yes, actually, I have like also kind of like many family members all over the Egypt and also in Europe and in the US, where you know each one have to travel, you know, for work, for family reasons. But like I based in Cairo, I born in Cairo, that is where I live. I left some years also in Alexandria in the north. But it's like my home is Cairo, you know.
Yeah. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but I imagine Egypt is like a country where I suppose like UK, where even if you say I'm British, when you go generation two or three backwards, it's just full of everything. So when you eventually try to un identify what is Britishness, it's very difficult because the background, like ancestors, will be from all over the country. So eventually, to find out a pure British person probably will be difficult. And I feel like Egypt is another country where it's such a mixture of nationalities wherever you go. So you hear different language and then you hear different dialects and probably I imagine like everyone's talking completely different language when you go to a market. Am I right?
Actually, I might give you my citizen point of view, which is could be archived in the history. It could be also archived in the history and narrative interpretation to the situation of our society. So I born late 80s. I born in 87, where actually I find the biggest majority are Egyptians and Egyptians, which used to be also came from diversity, different nationalities from the Mediterranean. However, the political scene and the political movements since 1952, as I do read in the history and I do kind of like audio documentaries with the people who still left in Egypt when I like grow up, like the big families who actually moved to Egypt from Mediterranean, from Europe, from whatever, and especially the Mediterranean countries, mostly they left the country again. Like, so mostly they are khalas, they are not in Egypt anymore. And what is already at the moment now, I can say it's pure Egyptians. Pure have different metaphor, but I mean Egyptians, like they have Egyptian parents and also Egyptian grandfathers. So my generation, it's pure Egyptian. Let's say it's like grandfather Egyptians and grandmother is it like the parents are Egyptians. So you will not listen to different languages, but you will listen to different slangs. So all over Egypt, there is Egyptian dialect, which is Arabic, but it's not the same Arabic language that you will listen to each Arab speaking country. We have the, like for me, we have the most famous Egyptian Arabic dialect, which is because of the cinema production, the history of the songs and the music, television series. However, in the north, you will hear Egyptian slang, but north accent, you know. In the south, it's also like no south accent, you know. So it's still Egyptian language, but it's different layers of geographical spots. Listen to different types of languages. You can find French, or I don't know, English, but it's these occasions in the capital, in the cosmopolitan Cairo, where you'll find neighbors that they came from countries to do jobs, or they are tourists. But like even I know personally some international citizens who actually moved to Egypt, and then they start slowly to speak the language, you know, just slowly, you know, but they're still speaking in English, you know. So it's another diversity of language as much as the Egyptian strong identity just affected everyone.
What's your second language? Was it English or French?
English. No,
English.
English. Yeah.
Okay. Everyone studies English.
Yes. In my generation, yes, but in the new generation also, there is a French, Italian, Deutsch, Spanish,
All right.
because also the international schools and the international universities as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gathered that you were surrounded by interesting books and cassettes and quite educated parents. How did you start your creativity career, and what was the most inspiration behind it? Was it
Maybe
school
I
or?
can start from the school, because I was working during the school time as well as in the summer time between each year of my high school as selling cocktails of cassette tapes. That was my actually job. People just send me a paper of the music list, like the songs list, and I produce the cassette. And then I give it with 10 bucks, you know. It was kind of like a casual job that I do it myself in the school. I think also I was lucky because my parents have the double tape cassette. So I just earn money, you know. I make cassettes for my colleagues in the
Love
school,
that.
for my neighbors in a good quality, and I earn some money in the summer. And I was also from time to time doing like a graphic design work at Kodak shop. So it was this kind of like I told you, I grew up in this cassette community, you know. And then I decided to go to the art education university, like it's a faculty of art education. And then I met my professor. Before actually applying to the university, I met my professor Ahmed Basyuni. And Ahmed Basyuni was actually one of the pioneers that teach me how like he actually gave me the infrastructure how to use my ear. I met him before the university. And he is the big reason that I apply for this university because he was a professor assistant in this university. He was my mentor. He was my big teacher. He was my big brother. And unfortunately, he have been killed in the revolution in 2011. So we enjoyed together since I met him 2004 until 2011. The journey of listening to the Cairo steps, the journey of recording with the Walkmans in the railway stations, in the streets, in the open markets, in the cafes, the way of see the Cairo noise. It's just your visuals to create visuals just based on the Cairo soundscape and the Cairo noise. We travel all over the country. We went to make conversation and dialogues only by cassette tapes. And when we had the chance to find one recorder, we shared the money together to record in a digital MP3 recorder. I mean, it was like this size to record it in a digital way. So I think it was the best journey to discover my city based on the sound, you know, to listen to my people, to listen to the different types of the language frequencies, not the language meaning. So this is how actually I start my practice to listen to my city.
You do still have these recordings?
Yes.
Oh, maybe you should just share that with me.
Yes, sure, I
Wow.
can.
Nowadays that, people do that, but then back in time, it's just, I do remember these recording outside and et cetera, et cetera. Nowadays we call it sound art, but then we didn't have time, the word like that, so we were experimenting, no, listening and experimenting. But how was it like in Cairo to do that kind of experimental work against mainstream music? How was it like, and also how was it like to do that as a woman?
We have like as a as my again my individual female perspective in my country as a sound artist, my country went to many different phases. So in the phase of 2004 until 2011, there was totally experimenting since the sound art history in my country actually archived years ago. And one of the main pioneers in electronic music composer and sound artist Halim al-Dabaa, who actually born in 1942, as I remember, and then he had a big movement to the US, where he composed music based on the ancient Egyptian history and the Egyptian tradition music. However, he well documented in the history, but regarding to the scene of the art and the contemporary art history in Cairo, he wasn't that much nominated, or he wasn't that much mentioned in the scene. And also sound art as a major, as a life, it doesn't that much exist since we was doing this experimental recording. I think I remember just people was kind of like called us like crazy and doing music by electricity, because music is music. It's pop songs or traditional songs, it's instrumentals and tempo and rhythm. It's like the beats, you know, and when you proc this image of beats and rhythm, you do something really contemporary, so no one actually understand it. So we went all together with a big community of artists in my generation, visual artists and sound artists. We actually was not against the society, but we would like to present a different type of contemporary philosophy art, which is exists around the world but doesn't exist in our country. So we had this kind of like experimenting do kind of like a little unknown places where we can play our music and show like my visual art friends. They do kind of like a video art, and I used to also do some kind of like video art as well. So we had this kind of like experimental art workshops that we do each year in the summer, and we keep updating each other. Also, the internet was that not big in my country. We don't have smartphones. There is no option to order something from Amazon or from internet. So we had kind of like updating altogether with the new books, new movies, CDs, new music until the revolution. And then when the revolution came, The art scene, especially my sound art career, it's changing a little bit since the revolution opened the platform for each one. A totally freedom. So from the 2011 until 2014, there was kind of like really ups and down from the really nice freedom that we have until the shock of the Muslim Brotherhood. So from a night to a day, we had the freedom in the night, and in the second morning we find ourselves in the jail. So Muslim Brotherhood just like watching you all over the street. They cancel many concerts. Art is prohibited. Moves not produced anymore. Even the mainstream songs, there was kind of like a big fight on it because music is haram, music is forbidden. So for sure, sound is forbidden. It's everything is haram, everything is prohibited. Music, it's doesn't work. Movies, yeah. And then we, after 2014, we have a different movement of go back again to the military and the army scene. So we went back again to the time before 2011, where we had military and army. But from 2014, there was, let's say, post-army generation, you know. It's like post-rock, like this, you know, that you have. You're controlled by the army, you're controlled by the military, but they make everything tight. So also you can do what you want, but we will never support you. So there is no supporting from the Ministry of Culture anymore. However, there is a little supporting, but regarding to the friends of the Ministry of Culture, you know. The people who actually like to be in the party of the Ministry of Culture. So there was no supporting financially. However, also the venues that already established since 2011, they don't have any funding anymore, because also since 2016, we have a big bad rules in the parliament where they prohibited and cut the international funding for culture in our country. Because they believe that we support the terrorism, and we support the Muslim Brotherhood again. There was a big scandal, but until now it's not easy to find the funding nationally or internationally in my country. So we still have, from actually until 2016 until now, we have like a big art scene, but it's around the world. Like most of my generation just moved the country, like me. People who still left in the country, they do kind of like social society solidarity work, you know. So it's still contemporary, it's still a big scene. I'm still proud of my friends and my colleagues, and my people still do and fight in my country, do music and do sound art, but it's not fair equality positions. They are suffering as well, you know. So it's just a summary. Since you mentioned the situation, it's different phases of the situation.
Would that situation the same towards men and women?
It's all about men and women as well.
Yeah,
It's everywhere, Ryoko. It's everywhere, Habibi.
it's everywhere, but I think the intensity of it probably different. The fear of a physical prohibition and mental prohibition is probably different. Like the way I feel when I go back to Japan is different from what you might have experienced in Egypt as a sort of the political movement changing from one to another. I mean, I do remember you're saying like it's not safe anymore to do your work there. Do you always feel that, or specific time of political movement?
It's not safe again individually, not only as a female, but also because I'm working on Sufi philosophy based on the coding composition, which I compose music based on the Sufi philosophy. And most of the Sufi history have a really tricky and a specific situations to each philosopher, to each thinker and writer, since it's not allowed to speak about your beliefs of God and relationship with God in a public and do your own personal interpretation. So this is not safe regarding to this point, but there is also another point. It is not, as you mentioned, there is nothing fair competition from a woman and a man. And in this point, I will not excluded one country. It's everywhere, but have a different titles, have a different images. And also it is somehow connected to not only your researches or music that you produce, it also came to who is your friends and who are the people are surrounding you, you know? So it's all together, all these pillars mix it all together that you feel, no, it's not my place of work anymore. And also it's a biggest struggles because however I believe that females have a big roles in my country since agent and agents and agents. However, there is well-known names went to the high top of the pyramid, and in the ground there are many, many voices of women. It's not heard anymore. So it's also luck play a big role, you know. Did you say yes to this one, or did you say no to the, to those like to this group, you know? So it's totally mixed up with many angles.
I love your argument and perceptions. Thanks for you living on the planet. Anyway, but how do you always argue your sort of religious points, political points, social points, or always like how you are through your work? Or do you sometimes withdraw it? I mean, you know, okay, even if you withdraw it, okay, the work always comes from the person, but do you always or often try to create argument or message through your soundworks or not?
I will speak out loud regarding to this point, since I don't have any like conclusion about the concrete answer, because really I don't have a concrete answer. But since I believe in my work, and since I also work on the history, how it's connected to the present and refer to the future expectations or plans. This is all the time, this argument that you would like to present the past to talk with the present. And since also out as an outsider of my research, the artistic and the art scene agenda have been moved so quickly and it changed so quickly. So as a person who produce, like the producer, you have two options. That you change your way of writing and composing to be updated with these fast moves of this art international agenda, or just fight for your principles, fight for your beliefs, and fight for your research. There is nothing right and nothing wrong. It's just a choice. And as long as I'm still, let's say I'm still on the fighting like battle, I don't want to change my research regarding to some money can fund my production, and my production should work on the climate change. However, I totally affected by the climate change. I read about the climate change. I believe that the climate change change each one on this planet in a bad way, by the way. And I know how it, that affect to the trees. I totally understand, especially because of I'm from Egypt. And do you know what does it mean climate change in Egypt? And the climate change and the military change the country. So they are like walking together to fuck up everything, you know? But also, I totally believe that climate change, it's a mandatory to speak about. But my little side of an artistic producer in my heart doesn't customize a proposal based on the climate change. So it's not easy to find your way in the new topics that is surrounded by you, and no one would want, don't want to speak about the history anymore. You got my point?
Yeah. Do you feel more responsibility, or do you create works purely for what you want to do?
I believe that now I'm live in my first life.
You're living in your first life.
Yes, this is my beliefs. It's the beliefs of Sufi and mostly the beliefs of Muslims. And also it's the old Egyptian religious, like the ancient Egyptian religion. So I believe I live now in my first life. I produce stuff not to be famous, but to be to present myself in a good way, to be proud of, and also to produce the stuff to prepare to do my second life. So sometimes I think that my production, it's just a nice preparation to be exist in the second life.
Oh, that's nice.
This is really my beliefs. This those production could be to the public in my first life, could be in the public, could be on the internet, could be a nice little chat in a bar with a friend, could be also a nice composition that I produced myself, but I didn't publish it on the on my Spotify or my website. So production in my first life, just a nice preparation for me to achieve and to be exist in my second life.
That's really nice.
Thank you.
I like that one. I might use that.
Sure.
Yeah,
Sure. But really, it's my beliefs in no, everything will finish, you know, everything will finish. And I don't see that if people just, other people just believe the death is the point of emptiness and finish the life. No, the death, it's just like a 1 second, like a femtosecond between your first life and your second life. And no one went to the second life and came back to our first life and speak about what's going on in the second life. So it's a totally mystery. Just be optimistic. So we have two lives. Yeah. So I produce music in my first life, and I believe if I have some synthesizers in my second life and a laptop, I hope I can have. I also can produce music in the second life. I just need my gear and my speakers and my mixer. So actually, I would love to pray, like to bury my stuff with me in the grave. So I like wallah, like the ancient Egyptian. This is my stuff. I will go to the second life with my gear, you know.
How do you know it's not your second life, but this is your first life? Or do you believe to live like first life? So your second life, if ever comes on, she or he will think that this is the first life.
I feel it's my first life because I feel it, like I feel my existence. If this is my second life, I will not become older. I will not become sick. So first life, you feel sick, you became older, you have troubles and problems in your body, which is the evidence this is your first life. When you achieve the second life, there is no illness. This is nothing sick. This is nothing hurts you.
Second life is something beyond.
Yes.
Ah, gotcha.
Yes. So the first life, If I cut the onions, I might hurt my finger. In
Mm-hmm.
my second life, if I have onions and knife and I will cut the onions, I will never hurt my finger. You know, it's like this. And
Okay, so in your
then
second life, you're still cooking.
in
We still have to cook to feed
and
ourselves.
yes, but by the way, wallah, I'm not kidding. This is my beliefs. I just think it's very optimistic, but this is really my beliefs.
That's really beautiful. So this belief becomes your experience, and then I suppose influences your creative outcome. How where is your work kind of located within this world of diasporas and all of the movement of human beings and the chaos? Or do
May
you see the chaos?
I tell you something which is really true?
Mm-hmm.
If you would like to make fun of me, do it.
If I want to make fun of you,
Yeah, do
get
it.
on.
Since long time, I find myself diaspora lives in my city in Cairo. Yeah, I feel even back then when I was living in Cairo, I have my own studio in downtown. For a long time, I used to travel many times each year, like every year, and go back to my country and live with my family. I also feel that I am a diaspora in Cairo. I think diaspora feeling and immigrant, I have like another level of this feeling since you might feel like lives with people you spoke the same mother tongue, you easily going and taking ground in the streets, but from your insides, you just find yourself different than those people, and people complain and judge, and at some point you don't have any safe moments in this society, and I think this immigration. It's for me, it's a soul immigration. It's not a body immigration. You know, this is a bit kind of like differences. So I might actually immigrate with my body to Germany. Who knows? Maybe I will went to another country. But also when I go back to my country, or either the days that I was staying in my country, I feel that my soul, it just doesn't exist in this society. Like my soul, it's immigrated to some other place.
I know exactly what you mean. You're losing a sense of home. I wonder if that's the fear of having a sense of home. I sometimes think that.
Because what does it mean, home?
Some people do live in one specific place and then they know where the home is. That's also quite dangerous too. You have this one specific home. Now what happens if something happens to that? A lot of people collapse. We choose, I mean, I choose to go away. And then, I mean, two side of me, there was this Korean dad, Japanese mom, and then back in Japan because I was brought up as Japanese, and then no one talked about being Korean because I was brought up as Japanese, and but I knew it and everyone knew it, and this idea of like, can I be nostalgic about Korean when I don't know anything about Korea? So there was always this emptiness in my head going like, where's my home? Because all of that, probably I left Japan when I was 18, but that was my will. And I traveled everywhere. You know, I lived in many places, but I did travel everywhere, backpacking. And then I lost a sense of home because when I go back to Japan, now I'm not Japanese anymore, and I'm specifically saying I'm half Korean, half Japanese now. So if I go back to Japan and I say it, there's always like, oh, you're Korean. In a way, I'm choosing to be free from it when in this society, there are lots of people who want to have this one specific home, and then suddenly, like, you have to be on the boat now. You have to live your life. What are you going to do? Just go. And that's another way of losing a home. They wanted to some people do love it, that security and house and things to take care of, and then just one moment like this gone, there's nothing, there's no money, house, bye, see you later. So there's a different kind of situations as well, but I find that really interesting, and also that's affecting me so much now as an artist. I'm just thinking about it all the time. So all of the people I've chosen in these interviews, I know that there's something, a very strong sense of identity idea. But how do you, the history of sound experimentalism, that the sound has to talk by itself. It's all about listening, and sometimes it's meaningless is a good thing, if you know what I mean. I struggle a lot. Like I want to talk about so much things, but then I do find that when I make compositions, it's a bit clingy to talk. But I just want to know what you think about these things.
It's a really important question. I also keep myself asking myself this question in each production, and until now I have one concrete conclusion of how sonics could be described to identify the composer. So my concrete answer is by the text. And actually, I believe even if I do compose kind of like a piece without any occasion, like just compose a piece without any exhibition or performance or whatever, it came basically from a thoughts. And thoughts, it came from kind of like a concept that my mind is occupied with this concept at the moment. And concept and a thoughts, it's language, and language, it's music, but also language could be a text. So this is the thing that I still insist to do until now. Even if I could write like three words on this sonics, and since also I'm working not only with the sonics at the composition, but also insert some of the songs and the chants that I used to work, or sometimes I speak myself, since also I'm working on the Book of the Death from the ancient Egyptian history and the papyrus. So it's also this language that I spoke myself or insert via my records to my composition, which is also another identity level that you give to your sonics. So it's not only the atmosphere and the feelings of your intimacy composition, but it also another layer could be added. And it's not a mandatory, it's not a must that we have to actually do kind of like one language or one sentence or whatever. But it's also this type of give another dimension to the sonics by description, and description not describing literally the meanings and the definition by your work, but it could be narration, you know. And this is one thing that I learned from my composition, since I also do a transcript of the old Sufi poets and the Quran sentence and the Bible and the Torah sentence to numbers, and I quote the music based on these numbers, which I find myself, it's altogether like went around and going around the world. Like the text, not only the definition, the historical side of the text, not only the side of understanding this language, but also the side of the text that document some of the history, believe or not, if it's right, if it's just interpretation by the others who lived in whatever 10th century. But this is another kind of like conceptual level that I believe I can add to my work. It's the text, it's the power of the word. It's a power, not only the power of the meaning, but the power of the word that can give the audience or give my friends or either give me another open gate to another perspective, you know. So other also words and text, it's a metaphor to see, to have vision, not limited to this story, not limited to this novel, you know.
What language do you work normally with?
Arabic. Some actually sometimes hieroglyphic, but because I'm working on the Book of the Death, but actually I speak some hieroglyphic language, but I'm not expert. But also I insist somehow to speak with the Egyptian Arabic language, and it's also part of my identity as well.
So what's this Book of Death project?
So the Book of the Death is already written on the papyr in the pyramids, in Khufu pyramid, 3000 BC, which actually a description of what I mentioned before, which is actually written to describe the transformation between the first life and the second life with the judge. So briefly, really briefly, it's not a big book. You can find it actually in the, it's by the way, the one of the old editions of the Book of the Death, pretty stolen from Egypt 200 years ago, and it's in the National Museum in London. And if you went to the National Museum, the library, the book shop, you will find the English transcript for this. It's really interesting. It's really interesting. So it's somehow really briefly the transformation to prepare yourself in the first life. So they give they give you tips to be a good person. Don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal money, don't steal food, don't kill. Like how to be following the principles and the ethics, and how to be a good person to prepare yourself to the next side of the world. And in between, this is the movement of the minute of the death, which is actually Isis and Osiris came to the judge and with the other gods in the court to weigh your heart. And then they read your summary paper for the first life. And then they make sign of yes, go to the second life with your stuff, or no, your heart is so dark. So it's really, really amazing. Like one of the, for me, it's the best book written ever. Believe me. If you have time, you can also apply, like down, like I don't know, buy it online or download it online. It's also an open source. I work on this in parallel with the text from the Sufi old history. And I work on the Book of the Death also since 2015, I guess, which I like the first production, you know. It's a long an endless project. And also because I believe in my research, the big similarity and the big connection and the strong conceptual beliefs and connection between the Book of the Death and the Sufi philosophy, since they together believes in the second life, the judge movement, like minute of the death, and then the second life. So they are the same mythology. They are the same philosophy. Ever the Book of the Death written 3000 BC, and the Sufi philosophy, and the Sufi books, especially the Sufi books that I'm working on. Now, actually, the LB, I work on the writer Ibn Arabi, which actually he came in the 13th century.
Oh my God, it's so interesting. Thanks.